Please silence any electronic devices so that we don't have our meeting interrupted. That goes for legislators. And by the way, any legislator caught playing Pokemon Go will be summarily expelled from the chambers. So. Would you please stand with me while we recite the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please give us the roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Here.
Mr. Dennis is asked to be excused. Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
We have quorum.
One second.
Sorry. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I have a presentation tonight. I'm very pleased to be doing that. It's one of those that we don't get to do very often, and it's one of our own. And I'm going to ask Kathy Covert to stand up with me, and maybe we'll go out front here after I say. Kathy Covert has now been with the County of Tompkins as an employee for 30 years.
Wow.
And if anybody looks at her, you wouldn't believe that for a second. But she's dedicated a great part of her career to us. So, Kathy, I'd like to present this certificate to you and say thank you. Few, except we legislators, realize how much our legislative clerks do for us. We have three of them. Kathy, of course, is the clerk. Michelle, to my right, is the Michelle Potorf is the chief deputy clerk, and we have a deputy clerk that is Katrina McCloy. And trying to herd 14 cats is not an easy job, and put all of our agendas together. Put all of our minutes together, work with us on scheduling and timing is a huge undertaking and a huge job. They do a wonderful job for us, and I just think it's important that we think about that as we go about our everyday. Everything seems to come when it's supposed to. That takes a lot of work behind the scenes. We're going to have executive sessions tonight. What I'm hoping will happen, because we have a relatively short agenda as far as the number of resolutions we have to go through, is that at 7 o'clock we will go into executive session. We will be talking about litigation and also possible real property matter, real property purchase. And then we will be talking about a personnel matter regarding a particular employee. So that should be at 7:30. If we get done before that, we'll all have a long break. I'd like to go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that any person has at each of our regular meetings to come and to speak to us about any subject for up to 3 minutes. We ask anybody who would like to speak to please sign one of these blue cards. And if they're in the back on the table, if you haven't signed it, please do that and pass it up. I have one blue card at this point. It's a three-minute, we have a three-minute clock over there that will start going. And please, if you haven't finished by then please wrap up. I have Leandra Mims, and we'd like to ask you to speak to us. Could you tell us your community and go ahead?
Yes, is that working?
This one that work?
Is that one? You think that one will work?
Probably.
You could try that one. Sorry, that other one wasn't working for you.
Leonora, can you hear me?
Is that
right directly into it? Pull it up.
Leonora, can
My name
That's
is Leonora
better.
Mims, and I just wanted to come and thank the legislator. 30 years ago, I came here. I was a battered woman, and the legislator voted for TAP, so I was able to go to college. And I wanted to thank the legislator so much for allowing me to do that. I became a paralegal, and one of the things that I loved about being a paralegal was I got to help people. So fast forward, I was able to move to Atlanta, and I was able to work with one of the top attorneys in the country in Atlanta. In fact, he worked for the cheating scandal case. But he wasn't just a top attorney. He was also a Vietnam vet that jumped out of airplanes, and he also was a PhD in education. So I was able to work for him in Atlanta. And the reason I was because I graduated from one of the best schools in the country. And I was able to go to Cornell University and use the law library at Cornell. And I'll never forget when he asked me what my legal research and drafting assignment was. And I was able to tell him that it was the Dram Shop Act. And then he proceeded to ask me, was a bar owner responsible if someone got in an accident? And I said, yes. And he said, you're hired. So I worked with him, which was very challenging, but I was able to do a great job. So fast forward, I went ahead and I got my bachelor's in international business, and then I got my MBA. And it was from one of the top schools in the country, and I kept a 4.0. And the only reason I was able to do that is because I graduated from schools here in Tompkins County. And I, you know, as I run around doing everything that I do, helping everybody, I wanted to thank the legislator for voting the money for me to go when I didn't have any money at all. And fast forward to those three kids that I had, one went to school. She studied computer science and finance, and she works for MetLife. The second one studied education, and she's a special education teacher and a Zumba instructor. And the boy is, he's the only one in the country that works for crews that does golf courses. So when you see the Augusta and everything, he gets them television ready, and that's what he does. So I wanted to thank you so much. When you see people and you vote and you wonder if your dollars work, I wanted to come and say thank you so much. So that's my speech, and I got 15 seconds. I'm done. Okay. I'm now working on my PhD from Emory University.
I think all I can do is give a collective wow. How impressed. Thank you so much for coming to tell us about your history here and your wonderful success and your family. We don't hear stories like that often enough, and it was very nice of you to do that. I have another card coming up. Sudale Hall.
Hi. Hard act to follow. Hi, I'm Sudale Hall. I'm from the Child Development Council, and I just wanted to give you a little bit of an update on the Child Care Development Block Grant, which is a federal block grant that supports child care subsidies and health and safety and parental choice for child care. The money comes from the feds, it goes to the state, and then lands here where it helps families and the child care happen. And in 2014-15 fiscal year, that block grant was reauthorized for the first time in about 18 years. And there were significant changes that were added to the law, and the states are scrambling and have been scrambling to try to meet those requirements. They're very important. They're important because they help families get work. That's the first thing. It helps low-income families have the same kind of access for quality care that other families have. And that's also very important because very often we can kind of dismiss their needs as not quite as important and their children's needs as not quite as important, and that is not the case. So the federal goals, I just thought I would remind you a little bit, and then last year you did pass a resolution in support of some funding for New York State to implement the changes that are happening. I'll give you a little bit of an update on that. So the federal goals are to promote, first, parental choice and empower working parents. And when they say parental choice, what they mean is that there's regulated care and there's legal but non-regulated care, and very often that's family members and friends, and the federal government says, who's to say what's the best care for your child and can meet those needs? And we do know that the non-regulated care particularly serves families who are working, parents who are working swing shifts, nights, weekends, non-traditional hours, kids with special needs sometimes, and definitely infants and toddlers where there's just not enough regulated care to serve everyone. It also make sure that the states have a coordinated approach to quality. And that's important because the number of players out there, people who are working around childcare, has just grown exponentially. It's a good thing on one hand, but it creates some inconsistencies and some turf battles at the state levels, and the feds are trying to get that a little bit more shored up. It increases the standards for health and safety. And the reason that, well, New York State's in pretty good shape than, say, some of the southern states, particularly Mississippi or Indiana. It's a Midwestern state. However, there's still quite a bit of work to be done in New York State. And the federal government's saying we need to have the same, at least basic standard of quality. Am I done?
Please continue. I'll extend you some extra time.
Okay.
I don't think there's anyone else waiting.
And the last is to make sure that those low-income kids get the same access to quality care, as I mentioned before. So what New York State Office of Children and Family Services determined they needed to implement these regulatory changes that were going to be coming down the pike was about $90 million. The governor put in, and this was ratified, $10 million in what is called a dry allocation. And a dry allocation means that they put a placeholder in there, but there's no real cash behind it. This was new to me, so maybe it's new to you too. That meant that if the federal government accepted our request for a waiver, we would be okay. But if they didn't, we were going to be in big trouble, and we were going to have to draw off not only that $10 million, but probably more. This board was really concerned about unfunded mandates, and this would create significant unfunded mandates for Tompkins County if there was an additional state funding for it. We just learned what the results of those waiver requests were. So we learned that New York State was awarded a one-year waiver approval for graduated phase out of subsidies, and that's important. That means that someone who's low income gets a job, starts getting more money, doesn't suddenly get cut off all at once, a cliff effect. That gradually, as their income goes up, their subsidy goes down, but they become accustomed to paying that cost of care. So that's really important, but we have a waiver on that one. We have improved payment practices and timeliness, supply building strategies for kids with special needs, infants and toddlers and other high need areas that are not met through the regulated system now, expanded training, increased inspections and background checks for all different types of care, and that's one of the really key components of this reauthorization, and that has also been waived, and site visits for all child care programs has also been waived for 1 year. What was not waived was health and safety training. Right now, family child care and group family child care, the providers have to have 15 hours of pre-service health and safety training before they can offer care. but this legislation requires that to be true for child care centers, for all the staff in the child care centers, for school-age directors, for all the staff in the school-age programs, and for the 200 to 300 legally exempt child care providers that we have here in Tompkins County and many, many more around the state. So that means that we have to hustle and try to figure out how to make that happen. It was supposed to have been done by the end of September. It won't be. And the third leg of the stool is that the federal government isn't real sure that our market rate, the amount that we pay, really gives fair access to low-income families. So our statewide plan will not be approved until they reevaluate that. There's a couple of different perspectives on an increased market rate. One is that you increase the rates and the providers get paid better. We think that's important, and that's they get paid more and they get paid better. However, if you don't increase the money, the whole pot, fewer people can access low-income subsidies. So that's the drawback. So we have to try to find a balance there. And the next steps then for us, for all of us, hopefully you passed a resolution last year. I think it's to really try to work to get funding in the governor's budget on the front end and get his support, and to look at how we can maximize the next 2 years. I think it'll be a little bit of a roll-in in terms of the money as well, since the funding was, or the services, the requirements were waived somewhat. Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming. Anna, would you like to ask a question?
Yeah, is that all right if we...
I think, because we knew she was coming about this,
okay.
So why don't you go ahead and ask your question.
Just a few quick questions. You said that the one thing that is not wavered is the health and safety training, and you didn't feel that we would be able to meet it by the September deadline. Did they outline that there would be fines if we were unable to meet that as a county?
We have till the end of September to submit. They have not said that there would be fines.
Okay.
New York State has until the end of September to say how they're going to meet that requirement.
And the waivers, they're only for 1 year. Do you have any sense of whether the political climate, if that's something they're willing to extend, or if it's a very hard 1 year and they expect we're going to be setting balls in motion now so that when they remove those waivers next year, we'll be ready? Do you know kind of what rollout they're looking for?
I think that some of them might get a second one-year waiver approval, but not all of them. And what we've heard is that if these are important rules, regulatory changes, why should we be waiting? We want to make sure that kids are safe in care.
Right.
We want to make sure that they have access, so there's no reason to wait.
Right. They all sound like amazing things. I would love to have them in place, so it's really the ideal situation is to get the governor to put it in the budget. Right.
Sorry. Right.
And that's the $90 million.
Right. The implementation of it would impact Tompkins County budget. It would impact directly, if it wasn't funded, the providers themselves, who would have to increase what they're paying for certain items, like their background checks, and it would increase our budget, the Child Development Council.
Martha, you had a question?
Yeah. On that cliff, first, you said this was waived for a year. So the graduated phase out as the parents' income goes up. So is that going to extend upwards or downwards? In other words, if the person right now gets full subsidy at, let's say, $12,000 a year, does that mean in order to graduate the subsidy that's allotted, you could either give them less subsidy if they earn more than $12,000, or you could cut back below $12,000. You know what I'm saying?
The New York State will have to explain exactly how it wants to implement it, but the subsidy amount that they're allocated would go down as their income increased. So it would be gradually they would get accustomed to paying more and more.
No, I understand. But is that gonna be a cut for anybody, or is that going to allow? Does anybody else understand my question? If right now somebody is making $12,000 and they get a full subsidy, if they make $12,500, right now, if that's the cutoff, right now they get nothing. So would they get?
Would they be required to pay the $500?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the goal is to have some gain for families, but I don't know how New York State will implement that.
Okay, I guess the other way is that they could lower the floor. They could say you only get full subsidy if you make 8,000, mm-hmm. and then we're going to graduate up to 12. So you don't know.
That's not the current thinking, but okay. I don't know how they'll play it out. How it'll play out.
Okay, all right. Because if they have the same cash but are spreading it differently, it could mean a lot of people lose.
Right now, the counties do play with this. There's a copay that all parents pay some portion, and counties have the right to choose what that level is, and the eligibility level is a county decision, not a statewide decision. So in Tompkins County, you're at 200% of poverty, but you could be at a neighboring county and only have to be at 130% of poverty, so those folks don't get funded right now. But those are county decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this tonight.
Thank you.
Let's proceed to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see, I think both Deborah Cipolla-Dennis and Duxon Nugent are here. Who wants to go first? Is there anyone else that I'm missing?
Is it still not working?
Okay.
It's been kind of slow. So the big thing has been the brown water, which is still an ongoing issue in the city. And Water and Sewer is working on it. They've added a treatment point at the intake. They're changing the mix of the chemicals at the treatment plant, and they're flushing hydrants. So, but it's still a problem. I got a call today about it, so they're still working on that. Like you, we got an update on the law enforcement consolidation RFP, and most of our discussion kicked off by a community member's input was about cultural competency when we're selecting the contractor who will do the study. And so I'm sure those concerns were brought by Ari back to the committee that's working on that. Just learned today, IPD is announcing a crackdown on pedestrian violations. And as a serial jaywalker, I encourage you to be. It'll look really bad for elected officials to get ticketed, so I'm going to up my game. I don't know if George has mentioned this. I don't think I have. But the city has, the parking department has started a scratch-off parking ticket or parking tag program. So this is in response to people having trouble with either the app or the kiosks. So you can go to the Chamberlain's office or most places that sell trash tags and buy these scratch-off parking tags that you just, when you want to use them, you just scratch it off, hang it on your rearview mirror. So if any of your constituents complain about parking in the city and the difficulty of using those things, then they might consider that as an option. Mm-hmm. So at planning, we talked about CTAP diversity requirements again, mostly about how much we expect from the developer, how much reporting we want, the specificity of their involvement in various groups. And we reiterated as a committee that we would prefer that the county implement or the IDA implemented countywide, but that we are willing to do it in the small portion of the city that CTAP applies to as a start if it comes to that. So tomorrow is city administration. The phase 2 microgrid funding is up for a vote. And the other thing, Mike Sigler will love this, is a prohibition on swimming in natural areas. So I think that's it.
Thanks very much. Martha has a question.
Hi, Doug. On the microgrid, do you know whether staff is proposing that, I guess it's the staff of the wastewater plant, right?
That's right.
Are they proposing to go ahead and apply for phase 2?
Yes, and the SJC agreed, and that's what we're voting on, or what the CA is voting on, and we will in August.
Okay, thanks.
Will Burbank?
A lot of stuff, nothing much happening.
swimming in natural areas, is that not already
prohibited? Apparently it's not. So there's a list of things that are prohibited, and swimming is not one of them. And it is being added, considered for being added tomorrow.
Okay. And the jaywalking, is this like a short-term push, or is this the new normal?
I feel like it's a new push, and it probably will not be sustained past, say, summertime, but I don't know exactly.
Thank you.
Julie.
I don't understand the scratch-off parking tag. Could you describe it again, please?
Sure. You would buy them in 15, 30, or 1 hour, maybe 2 hours. I forget all the units, but you buy a predetermined amount of time, parking time, and to use it, you have to scratch it off. And then once it's scratched off, it can't be used again. But you just hang it on your rear view mirror, and that, and I don't know how they tell when you've started. I guess you scratch off the time. I think the time is on there. So you scratch off your start time, and then the ticket or the tag also has a length of time color-coded on it.
Do you know what the maximum on a tag is, time-wise?
It's either 1 hour or 2 hours. I can't remember.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do hope they pay attention to the bicycle violations as well as pedestrian.
Oh, thank you. You read my mind. Will and I were just talking. I'm like, oh.
Yes, Carol Chalk.
I just want to thank you for being so conscientious about coming here and then conscientious about following up. I actually got an email from Duxon about something that had come up here, just saying he wanted to follow up. I can't even remember what it was, but it was just very good of you.
It's about College Town and downtown design standards, which I later learned was not you, it was Dooley, but I sent it to her too.
We're all interested, so sure. Thank you.
We just get a review of what the response was. I was very curious about that as well, what the email said.
So the consultant, Winter & Company, is working on design guidelines and standards. They presented a strategy memo to us. They went out to the community and talked to residents, elected officials, and other people, and kind of identified the core aesthetic elements of both College Town and downtown that people associate with those two neighborhoods or those two areas. And with our input, they've moved forward. By fall, they'll probably have a recommendation of either standards or guidelines, most likely a combination of both. So it's ongoing. Yep, new construction.
Thanks again.
Thanks.
Deborah Sepola-Dennis, Town Board, Town of Dryden.
Hi there. So I have a list of things, and I didn't have very much time to prepare for this, but I can answer questions if anyone has them. We have a meeting coming up this Thursday, and in that meeting we'll be having a hearing on a zoning amendment that would increase the number of dwellings allowed on a parcel of land from 2 per acre to 6 per acre in the rural residential and rural agricultural districts in areas where there is sewer and water service. So that would currently in those areas, in the hamlet areas, we allow 10 dwellings per acre. So it's kind of in the middle between what we allow normally in the rural residential and rural agricultural districts at 6 per acre. And the Planning Board is continuing to work on suggested changes to our renewable energy law. The Planning Board did a tour of the solar array at TC3 last month, and they've also been talking with folks from the town of Ulysses who are now working with a company that is putting in a solar array, a large solar array there. So they're considering things like setbacks and buffering and that sort of thing. We expect to have that wrapped up and ready to make those changes soon, hopefully before the end of the summer. Other planning updates, we are still considering the planned unit development. The Planning Board is reviewing this right now. This is a planned unit development at 1061 Dryden Road. It would be 36 units, townhouse-type units. and that is just outside the hamlet of Varna. The Tiny Timbers subdivision that is on Five Freeze Road, that's also in Varna, is moving forward. They have a sketch plan that they have put forth to the planning board, and they will be reviewing that at the July 28th meeting. 15 lots are planned for the first phase of this development, and these are very small owner-occupied homes, around 800 to 1,200 square feet. Let's see, what else did I have here? Okay. So we're also working with the towns of Ithaca, Lansing, and the villages of Cayuga Heights in Lansing on a restated agreement of municipal corporation for construction, financing, and operation of an intermunicipal water supply and transmission system, also known as Bolton Point. So that's a agreement just basically saying who's going to do what and who's going to pay for what. And on the meeting on Thursday, we will be considering a resolution to support TCAT. I think this resolution was put forward by TCOG to all the municipalities to consider. And it's basically just asking our state representatives to recognize and financially support public transit and its vital role in our communities. And we'll also be doing this in August, not in July, but in August we're looking into becoming a climate smart community. And a climate smart community is something that the state has designated, and it's done through the Department of Environmental Conservation. And we basically, a municipality basically takes a pledge to do certain things to mitigate and prepare for climate change. And we'll be putting forth that resolution in August and then probably putting together a task force to implement the things that we actually pledge to do. Any questions?
Thank you, Deborah.
All right.
Appreciate
thanks.
Your coming. Privilege of the floor for legislators. No hands. Shall we move on? Oh, Carol's got hers up.
The events of the past few weeks are just very scary, and I just didn't want us to have them go unmentioned here. It just seems like we get further away from understanding and self-control than ever. And I pray that our community and our law enforcement professionals respond to all of the events with enhanced communication, not further division. I hope that we won't respond by calling for any limits on freedom of speech or assembly here. Let's not respond to shootings on any side, and there have been shootings on both, from both the public and the police. Let's not respond to them by saying the police who acted poorly are just a few bad apples, but the insane individuals who shot at police speak for a whole national movement. I don't think that would be a healthy response, and I don't think it'll improve communication. I don't think any other movement is asked to disband when a few individuals go nuts and just mention the name of that movement. So I just hope that we can continue to find better ways, more and better ways here to improve communication. I think with the Ithaca City Police, I don't know if people noticed the the public barbecue that they put on this past weekend. Several hundred people came and got free meals. The Ithaca City Police had organized this and gone and raised the donations, and the feedback was very good. Let's do more of that rather than respond by increasing the divisions. And let's find ways to try to make that happen, that kind of thing happen, maybe on the county level as well.
Thank you, Carol. Very appropriate. Other people would like to speak. Julie Kiefer.
Well, this all sounds so trivial after what you were talking about. The Public Service Commission affects us in so many ways. At the moment, there's a proposal for New York State to bail out nuclear plants by having ratepayers cover costs for the next dozen years. And they've given us a very short window of time to comment on this proposal. And what we're asked to comment on is just the proposal. There are no options put out there. It's not clear that they've done any kind of examination of other ways for us to address energy needs, or what would happen if we actually closed the nuclear plants, which I think should happen since there is nothing green or safe about them. They just produce more and more radioactive waste. Although they do generate electricity, there are other ways to generate electricity. So that's the Public Service Commission on the one hand. On the other hand, there was a short article in the Ithaca Journal about Public Service Commission giving Verizon permission to stop publishing phone directories. Now, I don't know how many people still use phone directories. I'm old-fashioned enough that I like to have a paper directory to look up the yellow pages to see all the local businesses who do certain things. I like to have a phone directory to find out people's numbers and I want to reach them. And so there is a number that one can call if one caught that article, and you can ask to have phone directories delivered to your home, business, or white pages, or whatever. And I absolutely think it's fine not to waste paper by printing directories nobody wants or by not littering communities. But the Public Service Commission has so much effect on our lives, it's really interesting. That's what I wanted to talk about. Thank you.
Rich John.
I just wanted to talk for a minute about College Town, which is in my district. And if anybody's tried to drive through, you know that there's a fair amount of construction going on in that area. And it is fairly difficult to go through. But the parking garage is open. And I just wanted to say that for the business owners in College Town, summer is always tough when the students aren't here. But this summer has been really hard, particularly, I think, for the restaurants. So if you're thinking of going out for dinner, just consider driving up, parking in the parking garage, and visiting one of the good restaurants in that part of our community. Thanks.
Dave McKenna.
Thank you. On a much lighter note, I'd like to invite everybody to Newfield All Home Days, 29th and 30th of this month. The parade is on Saturday, the 30th. Starts at 11. Come on out and have a good time.
And march with us. Many of us are out there with Tompkins County as a presence, and the more the merrier. Anyone else? Anna Kellis.
Just very, very quickly, I've gotten some comments from constituents in the Fall Creek area, so this is sort of directly to constituents who are concerned about noise and also shaking that's happening because of the 210 Hancock development. They have put seismic meters along Willow Street to track the shaking that's happening. My understanding is a cutoff of 5. Anything beneath that, they don't. The understanding is that it isn't expected to cause any structural damage. But they do have a website, and that's what I want people to know about. It's 210hancock.org, and they have a timeline and schedule of all of the activity that they expect to be happening, and that can be used to track and connect directly with the developers.
Okay. I would just mention that, and along with Dave, there's another celebration happening this weekend at the other lake in Tompkins County. We have two, believe it or not. The second lake is Dryden Lake. So come on out for the Dryden Lake Festival and on Saturday and see what's going on out there. Have a nice time. Enjoy it. We have so many great festivals going on, and they seem to just kind of multiply. Every year we seem to get more. And so there's so many opportunities for people to come and enjoy our beautiful county. We don't have a special topical presentation tonight. I really don't have any other chair's report for you tonight or any chair's appointments. So let's go to the reports. Start with our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
I'm going to pass as well tonight, Mike. The only thing I would say to the legislature, Rick Snyder wasn't able to be here tonight, but I noticed that he did put the sales tax numbers in your red book, the packet. Second quarter numbers are in. We're still lagging behind last year. Not quite as bad as in the first quarter, but still the county is down by a little over 1%. Interestingly, the city's up by 1%, and the outside the city's down by almost 3%. So there's a kind of an interesting distribution of consumer activity within the county. But it's still the troublesome spot in our budget. I'll let him go into the details in a couple weeks when he's here to explain the details of the sales tax, but it is one that we continue to keep our eye on because it's not where we would want it to be. That's it.
Can I just ask Joe something before I go to you, Will? I think the comptroller announced something about the tax cap today.
Well, another element of the cap, the formula is in, it's the inflation factor. It's pretty close to where we had predicted it to be. It's going to be 0.6%, I think it's 0.66, something like that, is the inflation rate that's applied to the tax cap formula. Recall that there's a couple of other things in there that often work in our favor. If you look statewide, that's not the case. So we not only look at inflation as a major driver of our tax cap here, but also the growth in our tax base, which has really been our salvation over the last few years. We've had good growth in our tax base that's going to help us. We have some carryover from a prior year, which will help us. But when you look at counties and cities and all the municipalities and all the school districts around the state, the starting point in the tax cap this year may be the lowest that I can recall. At 0.6% inflation. And recall that the tax cap is really the starting point, is the lesser of 2% or that rate of inflation. It's often considered a 2% cap. It is the lesser of 2% and the rate of inflation, and then adjustments beyond that for tax base, carryover. I think that those are the big ones.
Will?
That was my question.
Carol?
So, whose rate of inflation do they use? Because, you know, if it's the CPI that's based on a basket of goods that the typical household purchases, which may be very different than the basket of goods that a typical municipality needs to purchase and the rate at which they inflate. So whose rate do they use?
Good point. I believe it's just the CPI.
Anna?
Just to understand a little bit better, this the 0.6% with all of the adjustments and calculations based on our tax base, have you done sort of a preliminary of how that will affect up or down our predicted tax cap?
I think we're going to be awfully close to what we predict. We predicted 2.5%. I think we're going to land at about 2.5%. It may actually blip up a bit because of, again, good, robust growth in our tax base. Okay. But I think we're going to settle at awfully close to where we thought it would be in the early spring.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Our county attorney is Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report.
And our finance director is not here tonight. We'll catch him next time. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Dan, you're up. We've got to add a resolution.
Yes, I would like to add a resolution authorization to execute quick claim deed sale foreclosure properties at public auction.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. All in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand. I think that's unanimous. Mike, did you vote?
No.
Are you a no?
Yes.
We have one opposed. We'll go to the consent agenda. I'll read the resolutions if anybody wants it off the agenda and wants it to be talked about, just say off. Out of the Health and Human Services Committee, we have Resolution A, creation of position, community mental health nurse to provide utilization review, Tompkins County Mental Health Department. That's ID 6429. And there is a revised version of that in your packet. The Public Safety Committee, we have Resolution B, authorization to accept project funding from other local governments and budget adjustment, Information Technology Services. That's ID 6401. Out of Government Operations Committee, we have Resolution C, refund correction of taxes, City of Ithaca, Parcel 70-6-2. That's ID 6440. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? Been moved by Peter. Is there a second? Seconded by all in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. We're going to go to standing committees. Greg Potter, thank you for coming. Let's go to the Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. We will meet tomorrow and 3 o'clock in this room. And I'm going to work off my phone here. We're going to hear a report from Tompkins County Area Development. They've done a feasibility study on a food processing incubator, and Martha Armstrong will be bringing that report. The rest of the agenda is reports from planning. On the housing needs assessment and the housing strategy update, there's a report on a request for qualifications for an organizer for the housing summit that I think I talked about last time. Have I talked about the housing summit?
I can't remember whether they brought it up in the meeting or not.
Okay. In some meetings I have, I can't remember. Okay, so let me come back to that. And we'll be talking about the Marsh will be talking about the microgrid stage 2 project, and it's a complicated decision, so it'll be an interesting discussion. The housing summit is an idea that kind of was really hatched by the Park Foundation in conversation with Joe and Ed and I and me, and for a community conference in probably November, a day-long conference maybe with a night before, a keynote speaker, and to really bring together as broad a cross-section of the community as we could to address the housing crisis that we have here in the county. By the fall, we'll have reports. Our own housing needs assessment will be finished. We'll have a report from Cornell on their student housing master plan. The city and Downtown Ithaca Alliance are also conducting their own study. So we'll have a lot of new and updated information to present to people, and we really want to bring people together for a comprehensive and wide-ranging discussion about solutions. So the Park Foundation is interested in supporting this. Megan McDonald and I drafted a proposal, and we submitted that to the foundation for the conference itself. In the meantime, it's really short notice here, and we would like to put together a few bits of money to hire a conference organizer, a professional planner who can really take all the details and logistics and follow up leads for speakers and find the best venues and that sort of thing. So we have an estimate of, say, around $10,000. The Tompkins County Development Corporation, sort of the nonprofit side of the IDA, or the public funding side of the IDA, last Thursday approved $2,500 to support this organizer. The issue is that the Park Foundation, even if they're supporting the full conference itself, their decisions won't get made till September. If we're doing this in the fall, we really need an organizer to get going sooner than that. So we thought a small amount of money from a few different places, we would be able to hire an organizer. So we've got $2,500 from the TCDC. There's a request. There will be a request through to be considered at planning tomorrow for $2,500 from the county, from the contingent fund. We have the city is working on a source for funding. TCOG and the town of Ithaca are looking at making contributions as well, and we have a couple of other ideas to put together the money for this organizer up front. So we have so that's going to be on the agenda tomorrow. It would come to budget on, assuming it passes the committee tomorrow, it would come to budget July 25th and then to the legislature August 2nd for this $2,500 for us to support this effort. So the hope is that the county wouldn't need to put anything into the conference itself that would be funded by the foundation and other sources that we'd be looking for, sponsorships, et cetera. So I've had this conversation with different groups and people. I didn't realize I hadn't told the full legislature. It might have actually not happened, you know, 2 weeks ago. So that's an update, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow, and then you'll hear about it at budget the following week.
So. Questions? Thank you, Martha. Charter Review Committee, Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. The Charter Review Committee meets Tuesday the 26th. That's, I guess, a week from today at 3 o'clock. Our main focus will be to take a real in-depth look at the pros and cons of having an appointed sheriff as opposed to an elected sheriff. We've had an elected sheriff for a long time, and it amounts to a kind of popularity contest, which may give us a really good sheriff and may not. If we had an appointed sheriff, we would have a job description. We would have a professional insured to run that department. And as policing becomes increasingly complex, it makes increasing sense to have someone who the legislature can oversee on behalf of the county. Anyway, we'll be talking about this in depth at the Charter Committee meeting next week. We have other revisits to do on other parts of the charter, but our focus will be mostly on the sheriff. And I hope that Marcia Lynch will be able to make the existence of this committee meeting and its topic widely known so that other legislators, other interested citizens could attend if they wished. Thanks, Mike.
Questions? Thank you, Julie. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Sigler.
So I talked to Jim, our fearless leader. There's no report. Our next meeting is going to be on Monday, so please come. It's going to be great. There'll be snacks.
Any questions? Thank you, Mike. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
I'm wondering if you're bribing people to come to the meeting, like there's snacks. Sounds like a bribe. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, which used to have snacks, not anymore, will meet on this coming Wednesday. I will not be here, but it will be chaired by Ms. Anna Kellis here, who is the vice chair of the committee. And one of our key items on the agenda is that there is the launch of a new community read of the book by Michelle Alexander called The New Jim Crow, which speaks to the issues of mass incarceration and how it affects particularly people of color, men of color. A beautiful prompt from our Deputy County Administrator, Paula Younger, that this might be a good thing for us to hear about as a county
since it will be rolled out, I think, beginning October, we have invited sort of the person designing, who's the design expert behind this community read, Roberta Wallet, to come speak with the committee about it so that we can also share throughout the county and get the county involved in participating in that community read. I'm hoping that it will roll out as similar as it did when we did the U2O understanding to overcome community viewing and discussion of Race to Power of an Illusion. So that's the main thing on our agenda for Wednesday. And we don't have snacks. I will not be there, and I will not be at budget either.
Thank you, Leslyn. Questions? Old Library Committee has not met, and we have seen some news about the city process in the paper this past week, having to do with the Landmarks Commission review. And it's my understanding that the developers are still working on potential changes to take back to that committee. We'll stay tuned. Questions? Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein is the chair.
Yes, I have nothing to report since the last report. The next meeting of the Public Safety Committee will be 2 days from now, at the usual time at 3:00.
Questions for Peter?
Wait, you have snacks? No.
Let's go to Health and Human Services Committee. Leslyn being Claiborne again.
So the Health and Human Services Committee met yesterday? Oh, good Lord, yes, yesterday. We had a long and informed meeting. We talked about a lot of topics. You know, it occurred to me as I was leaving the meeting and into last night that the whole field of health and human services and what we offer in this community is so huge. There are so many issues, so many things that need tackling, and safety nets that need to be put in place to support people who are falling through the cracks, who are in need, et cetera, et cetera. So at our committee, there's always something new that we're dealing with as we try to find solutions and work towards best practices for many of these areas. So one of the things you heard about today was just sort of the state of daycare, and we hope that our next meeting in August that we will have Sue Dale and perhaps some other providers, Sue Dale Hall and some other providers come and share with us. And first to begin looking as a county, what can we do in terms of supporting the need and issues around the need for daycare and childcare for many of our workers and many residents. Nonetheless, that's future. We talked quite a bit yesterday. We had a presentation. I don't know if you'll remember October and November 2 years ago of 2014. Liz, I just blanked on her name. Anyhow, from Cornell, a number of students and a professor and program manager at Cornell had brought to us a resolution around domestic violence and domestic violence's freedom from domestic violence as a human right. And this, thank you. And this county, our Tompkins County, passed that resolution and took a stance as a leader amongst our fellow counties in this area. While since then they have moved to what's called the implementation stage, and part of that is really informing employers what to look for and how to address issues of domestic violence in the workplace. Not necessarily people hurting each other in the workplace, but when folks come to work who are victims of domestic violence, what are some of the ways in which they're not able to be as productive? What are some of the ways that we need to make accommodations, et cetera? So they have been and just in the beginning stage of this implementation steps, talking to employers and engaging folks in perhaps including materials and ways to manage issues of domestic violence in their human resources policies and manuals and best practices. They did provide us with some materials that we probably have a copy here if someone, you know, wants to take a read of a potential policy as well as a toolkit. There are policies that are international and some that are national. And so what they did is sort of look at those and figure out ways to pull it together for us here in Tompkins County. So we're very appreciative of all the work they've done in that arena. More and more we're hearing of people who are coming forward talking about and being willing to be open and honest about issues of domestic violence. So we don't want to be behind a curve. We sort of want to be ahead of it in terms of human resource management. So at budget and personnel, one of the things we said yesterday is that we hope to put this on the budget and personnel agenda, not for this coming week, of course, but next month perhaps, for us to begin that conversation about what it would look like as a county if we were to adopt a policy or guidelines, not necessarily policy, but guidelines to support us as an employer in helping our employees deal with such issues. So that was one of the bigger topics of our discussions. Let me just add this little piece. I think one of the things that's important in having this local is the Advocacy Center, for example, and other employers, what they had been doing is if people had concerns and issues or complaints around DV, you know, they were referring them to, like, national resources because employees didn't know what to do. So now we will have something, a toolkit that employees can essentially use here locally to help them with that issue, and this group will provide the training. We are thankful that our own Office of Human Rights was also involved, and our Human Rights Commission as well, both the office and the commission, were involved as partners in molding these guidelines and the toolkit. So thanks to all of them. We also had a very intriguing sharing of information by Ted Sheely. Ted talked with us about T21. If we looked at what Cortland County passed, the resolution Cortland County passed, and we had a very spirited discussion in how do we engage in a more comprehensive look at if we were to implement something like that, what does it mean, or if we go further. T21 is, for those of you who don't know, is the restriction of sale of tobacco and tobacco products to anyone. You have to be 21 or older. So I think right now, I think the age might be 18, I'm not sure, but we want to shift that age, buying age, to 21. Some of us would like to see tobacco products removed entirely from the county, and we have that right. We can do that. But there's much more to it as we talk about people's rights to do what they want to do with their own bodies, according to will. Do bad stuff to your bodies, it's up to you. But how do we then protect other people who don't want to have bad stuff happening to their bodies by secondhand or by default? So that's a conversation that we will continue to have, because we just feel like we just can't roll out a resolution right now and make this happen without some real intensive discussion around it. So we will continue that conversation. We were pleased to hear from the Mental Health Deputy Commissioner that we had a PIP review by the Office of Mental Health for all the things that they've been slapping us around about. They spent a day and a half with us, and she said, "We passed." I wrote it in big capital letters. So we're doing good stuff, and part of it is in the resolution that was passed on the consent agenda. Really, Sharon?
Yep.
Yes. Putting in place, along with the staff there,
a whole sort of compliance and quality assurance portion of their work. Jeremy was there with us. Jeremy is now sort of moved into that position so that we are following up on all the things we're supposed to be following up on, making sure that we're dotting the I's, crossing the T's, that clients are getting not only the service that is appropriate, but they're getting the appropriate level of service, and that we are making sure that it is all accounted for properly. So we're really pleased to have passed that. And I think that was sort of the main things that we talked about at the committee. I mean, I have a whole lot more notes, but, you know, those were it. Committee members, if there's anything that you'd like to add.
Yeah, I just have two things really quickly.
Anna?
One thing I just wanted to add about the domestic violence that really affected me, and I want to add to Leslin's really important summary of this, is the ability to train personnel and management to recognize the difference between poor performance and poor performance because of a response to domestic violence, because it does show that it can affect performance. And the issue is, if someone loses their job because of domestic violence, and it's the one thing that actually creates the self-efficacy and the independence that they need to potentially get through the situation, that's a terrible result. So the guidelines are, to some extent, are to help train to recognize that distinction, and I really appreciated that. The other thing, in Shili's informational about the T21 was that if we wanted to create a similar resolution to what Cortland County just passed and several other counties have passed, that he recommended that we not necessarily rush through this, and we consider also what some counties have identified and included, which is a licensing process for local companies that sell tobacco so that we can track. Because part of the problem is that we can't track the sales, and therefore we can't identify when it's currently being sold to underage, even to begin with. So we don't know what our baseline is. If we don't know what our baseline is, it's hard to understand what our performance changes and how do we address some of the issues. So I just wanted to add those two pieces.
Thank you.
Carol Chalk, then Rich John.
Yeah, I was
just... Sorry.
Before you go on, yeah, let me just go back quickly to the DV piece of it to say that the group of individuals working on this are also going to look to engage more stakeholder groups. So one of the groups that they recognized they hadn't involved a lot were our law enforcement. And so that is, you know, campus police, many others, Title IX managers and compliance officers. And so they hope to be reaching out to IPD, to our Sheriff's Department and others to get them more involved in understanding this toolkit, the guidelines, and being a part of the role, since they are ones who have to deal so much close at hand with the calls that come to them around issues of domestic violence. They may have a little bit more to add to what they've presented to us. So I just wanted to share that. I'm done now.
Carol next.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, and maybe we should ask staff to distribute this, because we have it electronically, the toolkit, and I think in our packets it came as policy, but guidelines, as with some discussion about whether it should be a guideline versus a policy. But the toolkit in particular is written so clearly. I really encourage people to look at it. It's large font. It's for those at home who aren't going to get the link sent to them. Our Health and Human Services Committee of Monday, July 18th, if you go to tompkinscountyny.gov, and look at our meeting portal, you can get to our packet that had these materials included there. And it was just such an aha moment to hear the part of the presentation and the part that's in here about the ways in which domestic violence can affect victims in the workplace. That there's such a stigma for people about admitting that that's the issue, that supervisors or colleagues may not realize that showing up late to work, exhibiting signs of stress, having excessive absences, being unable to concentrate at work, and signs of decreased productivity, which are outlined in here on one of the very clear pages, just might be something else, and that responding, with clamping down or even sending the person home may just make things a lot worse. So learning to recognize this will be good for the employee, but also good for the workplace if we can help people deal and become more productive again at all levels of the organization.
Rich?
I was wondering if the committee anticipates taking any action or holding hearings on T21 before September.
No.
Thanks. Anyone else? Leslin, thank you for your report.
You're very welcome.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. F&I has not met. We will meet on August 1st in these chambers at 3:30. I did, however, have an opportunity to take about a half a day with Jeff Smith last week and view a ditching project and the Pine Tree Road pedestrian path project. And I have to say the work was very impressive. The ditching project made the people very happy, and it solved an issue for them, also for us. And Pine Tree Road is coming right along. The abutments are just about completely poured. The path is in. The retaining walls are in. The topsoil was being put down along the banks as I was watching what was going on when we walked up through there. The only part that's not complete is the bridge itself and the serpentine path that goes to it from the print shop area. So, anyway, thanks very much to Jeff and his crew, and that's it.
Dave, do you want to mention about the airport project?
Yeah, I should mention about the airport project, shouldn't I? I had the opportunity to go up to the airport the other day and view the repaving of the runway. And it was quite impressive with all the trucks and the equipment up there. They actually have a machine that puts down the blacktop. It's like a conveyor system so that the machine that actually puts the blacktop on the ground doesn't have to bump into the truck, creating ripples in the blacktop every time they touch. And that machine is completely controlled by a laser system and actually feeds the blacktop from the top down rather than from the bottom up, which basically means it's within an eighth of an inch its entire width and length, which is pretty darn amazing. Wow. Anyway, so that's basically it. That should be, as it stands right now, the airport is planned to be open this weekend, Saturday morning. If that changes, I'm sure there'll be announcements, but that's the plan at the current time.
Martha first, then Anna.
And wasn't there going to be a little community celebration? When was that? Is that going to be?
That starts at the opening, basically. They're going to have some various kinds of prizes and things for passengers and people at the airport that are in there for whatever reasons.
Is that Friday or Monday? When is that going to be?
I believe that starts actually Monday.
Monday. Okay.
I think that's what Mike said the other day. I'm almost positive it starts on Monday.
Monday, July 25th is a ribbon cutting at 9 a.m.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. Thank you.
Anna?
I just wanted to mention he is inviting those of you who want to see the process that he just described, I'm going tomorrow morning around sometime between 9 and 9:30. If anybody wants to join, I know some people went this weekend. I wasn't able to go from injuries, but I will get a chance tomorrow. So anybody wants to go.
You know, Dooley was there, and I was there, and I think Joe went up. A lot of us had a chance. It was just, it looked like a project coming together the way it ought to, and one we can be proud of.
Yep.
So. Question?
Yes.
On the Pine Tree Road, do you know offhand if that's still scheduled to be open? You know, the road to be open before the students come back?
As far as I know right now, it's on schedule and it will be open. The road will be open. The one downside to that is there's a possibility the bridge might not get there on time. If it doesn't, there will be probably a half a day or a day shut down to install the new bridge when it does arrive. But currently it's on schedule.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Transportation Committee will meet on Friday of this week here at the Legislature Chambers. We have David Smith, who is the new regional director, Region 3 of New York State Department of Transportation, will be coming down to meet with the committee and talk about our state highways in Tompkins County and where we're going with a county that is increasing in population with a large commuter traffic. How do we attack the issues of the highway traffic that we have? Any questions I can answer?
Please
come to the meeting if you'd like to.
When is that? When and where?
3:30, 3 o'clock.
What day?
3:30 this Friday, the 22nd. We had to move it over because Mr. Smith's schedule. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go to Government Operations. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to start out by introducing the resolution that was added to the agenda earlier tonight. That is authorization to execute quitclaim deeds, sale of foreclosure properties at public auction.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter. Discussion? Dan?
So this is, we had already authorized these properties to go for auction. The auction happened, and this is just the last piece of the formality that we need to do to authorize the last stage to issue the quitclaim deeds.
We're ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
The only item from our last Government Operations Committee meeting to report that wasn't already included in the agenda is that the Biggs parcel has gone up for sale. It's being listed at $275,000. The next meeting of the Government Operations Committee is Wednesday, August 3rd at 3:30 in these chambers, and that is my report.
Anna Kellis.
Just curious if there's been any interest that has been expressed for that lot or any discussion further beyond when it's listing?
I mean, I haven't heard of anything. There's certainly no offer.
Okay.
Anything else for Dan? Dan, thank you very much. Let's go to minutes of the previous meeting, July 5th. Someone want to move them, please. Martha, seconded by Anna. Discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? We have one opposed. I would ask for a motion to go into executive session. Tonight we'll be discussing, as I said earlier, a litigation issue, a real estate purchase issue, and a particular employee personnel issue. And we expect to go into executive session and come out a little later, and we don't expect to take any further action before we adjourn. So I saw Peter's hand to move to executive session, seconded by Anna. All in favor of going to executive session, please raise your hand. That's unanimous. We'll take 10 minutes while we shut down, and then we'll start at 7.